Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. This is a series of recordings as a project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are on Daf Yud Amud Bet, that's 10B. We've actually started the Daf already in our previous recording. We are 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines down, and we are returning to the topic of Purim. In fact, we're about to enter into a fairly lengthy section of Agadata, non-halachic teachings, related to the Megillah and to Purim. Now, I don't think that's the reason we got into this originally. I think what happened here is our previous teaching had to do with Rabbi Levi, who said that we had kol shetaleh lecha mesorah biyadcha miavotecha, that we had a mesorah from our forefathers that about which cities were walled from the time of Yoshua ben Nun and which cities were not. So we had this idea of the Mesoret Biadenu. So I think that we're going to continue with that topic, and that's what happens here. So right, it's four lines up from where the lines get wide, and it begins Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, and it was in the days of Achashverosh, which are the first three words of Megillat Esther. Amar Rabbi Levi, so we have a continuation of Rabbi Levi, V'itema Rabbi Yonatan, some people say it's Rabbi Yonatan, and he uses the same language. Davar zeh, this matter, Mesorah biyadenu, is a Mesorah in our hands, it's an oral tradition passed down, Me'anshe Knesset Hagdola, from the men of the great assembly. So what actually this is going to introduce three teachings in the name of Rabbi Levi. That's our next section. That's what we'll do in this recording, our three teachings in the name of Rabbi Levi. It happens to be that the first one is related at least tangentially to Purim, because the first teaching is what it says is Kol Makom Shenemar, any place, I'm on the last skinny line, Kol Makom Shenemar Vayihi, anytime that a section in Tanakh begins with Vayihi, which means and it was, Eino Ela Lashon Tsar, it is only a language of pain. In other words, what they're saying is anytime a story begins with Vayihi, you know that it's about to introduce something that is going to be painful or destructive. And he gives a whole bunch of examples here. So these are the examples. The first one is from the Megillah, Vayihi bimei Achashverosh, and it was in the days of Achashverosh. So we know that that should be introducing a story of pain, Hava Haman. And so what happens is Haman. Now, of all the examples, this is actually one of the weirdest ones, because Haman doesn't show up until chapter 3. And in all the other examples, it's usually either the next verse or the next paragraph that the Tsar is introduced. Here, this seems very, very difficult. You might argue instead, Vayihi bimei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, that it was Achashverosh himself that was the pain and the tsar for the Jewish people, not Haman. Arguing that it's Haman is actually the hardest one to argue of all the examples, because let's take a look at the other examples. The next example is the very beginning of the book of Ruth. Vayihi bimei Shvot HaShoftim. It was in the days of when the judges were judging. So the story of Ruth happens at the same time as the story of Shoftim. And the immediate next phrase is Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz. And that's what the Gemara says. Havara'av. There was a famine. So Naomi and her husband and her sons had to leave the land of Israel and go away, which is where they met Ruth. But the introduction of Vayihi introduces the famine. Okay, and the next example is from the book of Bereishit, chapter Vav, chapter 6. Vayihi ki hechel ha'adam larov, when the men began to proliferate across the face of the earth. This is the generations after Adam. So human beings began to proliferate across the earth. And they started, it tells a whole unusual story about how aristocrats or the angels began marrying the daughters of men. And the next paragraph after that, it says, Vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'at ha'adam. Hashem saw that how very, very bad the human beings were acting, that they were not acting morally. And that's when he decides to bring the flood and to save Noach. So the introduction of Vayihi ki hechel ha'adam, and it was when the human beings began to proliferate across the face of the earth, introduces the flood, basically. Okay, the next example is the Tower of Babel. Vayhi benos am mikedem, and it was when they traveled from the east. Hava nivna lanu ir, they said, let's build a city and a tower in the middle up to heaven. And then we know that Hashem came down and confused their language and dispersed them across the face of the earth. So the Vayhi introduces the tsa'ar of galut, of exile. So far what we're seeing is that the Vayhi introduces either suffering from an enemy, a famine, or a punishment from God. Those are the things that it seems to introduce. The next example is the War of the Four and Five Kings in the time of Abraham. So during Abraham's lifetime, four kings on one side and five kings on the other had a war. And Lot, Abraham's nephew, was caught up in the middle, which is how Abraham got involved. But that story begins, Vayhi bimei Amraphel. And it was in the days of Amraphel that the War of the Four and Five Kings happened. Asu milchama, they made a war against Kedar LaOmer. So in this case, Vayhi introduces the tsa'ar, the pain of warfare. The next example, and this also is a very strange example, but it's an example that we've seen before. We don't bring any other stories from the Torah. We skip right to the book of Joshua, to Yeshua. And it says, Vayhi bihiyot Yeshua b'Yericho, when Yeshua was besieging Jericho. And we already learned the story a couple of dapim back, that the night before they besieged Jericho, he was walking alone outside the city, and he encountered an angel of God. Now, here it introduces that the next verse is V'charbo shlufa biyado. When he encounters this strange man in the middle of the night, he is holding a naked sword. In other words, he's threatening him with the sword. Now, of course, then Yeshua has a conversation with him, and it turns out that he's not a demon, but he's an angel of God, and he's coming to tell Yeshua that he's upset that they are being mevatel Torah. That's what we learned earlier, atabati, that he came. He said, I came now because you should be learning Torah now. And he was more upset about that than he was upset about the fact that they had stopped offering the daily offerings, the tamid sacrifice. But this, in this case, Rashi brings a comment on it that because when it says Vayihi, that Yeshua was walking at night outside of Jericho, suddenly he encountered a threat from an angel, a naked sword, that even though it wasn't actually tsar, because the angel never attacked him, that it introduced the negativity of being threatened with violence. But it's a little bit strange that they bring it because it doesn't fit in with the whole pattern. The next one is just from the next chapter, chapter 7 of the book of Yeshua. After Yeshua and his troops blow the shofar and the walls of Jericho come tumbling down. So then it says, Vayhi Hashem et Yeshua. Hashem was with Yeshua and his reputation grew very large. But he had told them not to take the spoils of Jericho. And lo and behold, Vayim'alu b'nei Yisrael, the children of Israel, did take some of the spoils from Jericho and they were punished for it. So the Vayhi there introduces the fact that the Jewish people did not follow Hashem's command and were punished for it. The next example is from the book of Shmuel, and the book of Shmuel begins by telling the story of Shmuel's mother Chana, and it says, "Vayhi ish echad min haramatayim." There was once a man from the heights who lived in the communities in the heights, and this man was Elkanah, and he had a wife named Chana. And he loved Chana, but she was barren. So later, a couple of verses later, it says, Kiet Chana Ahev, he loved Chana, Vashem Sagar Rachma, and Hashem had closed her womb. The truth is there's an earlier Pasuk, like in Pasuk Beder Gimel, that it says that Chana had no children, and they could have just used that verse. But I guess they use the verse here to amplify the pain that despite the fact that her husband loved her so much, she was barren, and that, you know, the combination of those two things was very painful for her. So here the Vayhi introduces the pain of infertility. The next example comes from Shmuel, the end of Shmuel's life, and it says, Vayhi ki zaken Shmuel velo holchu banav bidrachav. Shmuel had two sons that he wanted to succeed him and to be leaders of the Jewish people, and those sons, it says in the Torah, were not good sons, and they didn't follow in his ways. They took bribes, and they defrauded the people. So that was the pain of Shmuel's children, who were not good people. The next example comes from David and Shaul. So Shaul becomes the first king of the Jewish people, and David, after he defeats Goliath, is his young consigliere. And here it says in Shmuel Aleph, chapter 18, Vayhi David l'chol d'rachav maskil. David was successful in everything that he did. Vashem imo, and Hashem was with him. And then it says, Vayhi Shaul oyein et David. And then Shaul put his evil eye on David. He began to be jealous of David, and he looked at him. Now, I think that this is a mistake in the Gemara. If you take a look at chapter 18, verse 6 of Shmuel, so we have to go to chapter 18. Well, if you look at the way that it says it here, it seems out of order, meaning the verse that says that Shaul was Oyein et David is verse 9. And the verse that's quoted here in the Gemara is actually verse 15. So it's out of order. Usually the Vayihi has to happen, and then immediately afterwards the negative thing happens, the Tsar happens. And here it seems out of order, but if you look there, you'll see there's a whole bunch of Vayihis. So I think it's probably true that they meant to use, instead of verse 15, that they meant to use verse 6, which says, Vayhi bivoam b'shuv David me'akod plishti, when David and Shaul came back after he killed Goliath and they defeated the Philistines. So the women went out and they sang about how Shaul was a valiant warrior, but David was an even more valiant warrior, and Shaul was upset that David had a better reputation among the people than he did, and that's why he was Oyein et David. And that story also begins with Vayhi, so I think probably that was the verse that they meant here. But in any case, here it introduces the Tsar for David, that Shaul keeps trying to kill him, which he does. Shaul a number of times tries to kill David. Okay? And there's one more example that's given. The final example comes from King David himself later in his life. Vayhi ki yashav ha-melech beveito, when David was sitting in his house, he had defeated all his enemies. And then Shaul comes to him and says, Hashem is upset that you're living in a beautiful house. The king has a beautiful house, but Hashem has no Beit HaMikdash. And he says to him, Rak ata lo tivne habayit. You will not be the one that will build Hashem's house. Now, we saw in another place that the reason that David couldn't build the Beit HaMikdash was because dam la rov shafachta, that he had spilled a lot of blood. But this offers another possibility, that David had worried about his own kavod before he worried about the kavod Hashem. But the Vayihi, and it was that David was sitting in his house, introduces the disappointment and frustration that he will not get to build the Beit HaMikdash. Of course, this is a little bit different than all the other ones, not quite the same as war, or famine, or infertility, but each one of these introduces something negative that's about to happen. Vayihi is a kind of a foreshadowing. Now, the Gemara is going to, there are a lot of Vayihis in the Torah and in the Tanakh, and the Gemara is now going to give some counterexamples. We see that there are some Vayihis where nothing bad seems to happen. As an example, Vehaketiv, as it is not written in the book of Vayikra, Perek Tet, chapter 9. This is the day on which the Mishkan was dedicated. And it says, Vayihi Bayom HaShmini, it was on the eighth day. This is the beginning of Parsha Shmini, which is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. And we learn about the eighth day, Vitanya, we learn in the Brita, Oto Hayom, that day, the eighth day, Haita Simcha Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was joyous before the Holy One, blessed be He, Kiyom Shenivr Ubo Shamayim Va'ar, it's like the day on which the heaven and the earth were created. So the Gemara's question is, here we have a story that begins Vayihi, but it's a story of great Simcha, the dedication of the Mishkan and the offering of sacrifices to Hashem was a very happy day. So it continues to explain how we learn that it has anything to do with creation. Ketiv hacha, here it's written, Vayhi bayom hashmini, and it was on the eighth day. Uchtiv hatam, Vayhi erev, Vayhi voker yom echad. The verse is slightly corrupted. It's in parentheses. If you look at the emendation, you can see that it's meant to quote the whole verse. So we have two verses, actually, that begin with Vayihi. One is Vayiyer, Vayivoker Yom Echad, and it was evening and it was morning one day, the first day of creation. And here, Vayihi Bayom HaShmini, we're connecting the two Vayihis, both for happiness, that it was a very happy day when God created the world, and it was a very happy day when the Jewish people put up the Mishkan. I think it's also trying to compare, which is often true, the construction of the Mishkan as if it's the building of a world. Just like Hashem created the world, then when they built the Mishkan, it was an act of creation like that of creating the world. Okay, so the Gemara answers, well, the truth is there were happy things about the eighth day, but hash chiv nadav avihu. But we know what happened on the eighth day. What happens on the eighth day is nadav and avihu do the wrong thing, whatever it is that they did wrong, and they are killed in the fire on the eighth day. So but maybe vayhi bayom hashmini is introducing the death of nadav and avihu. Okay, so the Gemara gives other counterexamples. V'haketiv, but doesn't it write here? This is in the book of Malachim, not when the Mishkan was consecrated, but this is the Beit HaMikdash. Finally, at some point, the temple was initiated. And it says, Vayhi bishmonim shana ve'arba me'ot shana. It was 480 years after the Jewish people left Egypt. And then the Beit HaMikdash was consecrated. And it begins with the word Vayhi, and it introduces this extremely happy day when they finally had a Beit HaMikdash for Hashem. Ve'akativ, and they don't even discuss it. They just keep giving more counterexamples. And it also writes, Vayhi kashera a Yaakov et Rachel. And it was when Yaakov saw Rachel. And of course, then Yaakov worked for Rachel and he married her. So that's a happy occasion as well. Now, in each of these, you could possibly think of negative consequences as well. After all, the Beit HaMikdash eventually was destroyed. Yaakov had to suffer under Lavan for 14 years before he could marry Rachel. So it's unclear how immediate the foreshadowing of the negativity has to be, but the Gemara is quoting these examples as stories in which Vayhi seems to introduce a positive storyline. V'haketiv, and it's also written, V'yere v'yvoker yom echad, and it was evening, it was morning, one day, the day of creation. V'yika sheni, and the second day of creation. V'yika shlishi, and the third day of creation. V'yika tuva, and so many of them, all the other days of creation, and not to mention, if you look around, you'll find some other vayihis. And there are some that are like this, so there are some happy vayihis, and some not happy vayihis. Vayhi bimei, but there are only five times in Tanakh where it says Vayhi bimei, and here are them. Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, and it was in the days of Achashverosh, and that leads to Haman. Vayhi bimei Shvot HaShoftim, and it was in the days of the judges. That's the beginning of the story of Ruth, and that introduces the famine. Vayhi bimei Amraphel, and it was in the days of Amraphel. This is the war of the four and five kings in the time of Avraham, and according to the Midrash, that was the first war that ever happened. So it introduces the first time that human beings went to war. Vayhi bimei Achaz, and it was in the days of Achaz. This is the beginning of Yeshayahu, and at that time, as soon as Achaz became king, Pekach ben Mirmalyahu, a non-Jewish king, came up, and he eventually would harass the Jewish people. And finally, the last one is Vayhi bimei Yehoyakim, and it was in the days of Yehoyakim, who was also a king in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash. And the Marsha points out that if you look at the Targum to Esther, it gives an explanation for all the previous four, for exactly what happened in those cases that was negative, but it for some reason does not explain what happened in the days of Jehoiakim. But this Vayhi bimei Jehoiakim is the very beginning of the book of Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu chapter Aleph. And of course, we know that it actually introduces the story of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in the days of Yirmiyahu that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So in the times of Jehoiakim really begins the story of how the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And he argues that that is the negative thing that was happening at that time. And maybe the Targum didn't mention it because it was so negative they didn't want to say it. Okay, so the conclusion of the Gemara is that the Mesorah that we have in our hands is that Vayhi bimei always foreshadows something negative that's going to happen. Now, we have two more teachings in the name of Levi. Amar Rabbi Levi, Davar zeh Mesorat bi'adenu mi'avotenu, the same formulation that this is an oral tradition, a Mesorah that we have from our forefathers, that Amotz ve'amatzia achim havu. We have these two guys with similar names, Amotz and Amatzia, and we have a tradition they're brothers. Now, Amotz is the father of Isaiah the prophet. His name was Yeshayahu ben Amotz. And Amatzia was a king of Yehuda during the first Beit HaMikdash period. He actually was a righteous king, and he tried to follow Hashem's ways. So they don't have anything related to each other in the Tanakh, except for the fact that their names sound very similar. But we have a tradition that they were brothers. Why? My Kamash Malan, what is it coming to teach us? Kihad Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, it says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, in the name of Yonatan, Kol Kala Shehit Snua Bevet Chamiha, any daughter-in-law is probably what it means here, who is snu'a, she is modest in her father-in-law's house, meaning she, you know, she's living in her father-in-law's house, and her father-in-law is not directly related to her, and so she is very physically modest in his house and in his presence. Zocha v'yotzin mimena, she will merit that what will come out from her are malachim u'nevi'im, kings and prophets. So the reward for modesty in your father-in-law's house is that your children will be kings and prophets. Minalan, what's the source for this? Mitamar, we learn this from Tamar. Now Tamar was the daughter-in-law of Yehuda, Yaakov's son Judah. Dichtiv, and there's this very strange story in Breishit. Vayir'eha Yehuda, Yehuda saw Tamar, vayachsheveha lezona, and he thought she was a prostitute, kichista paneha, because she covered her face. So this is a longer story that I want to tell the whole story now, but basically Yehuda was treating Tamar incorrectly. He was making her wait for his younger son to get old enough for her to marry, and she was trapped. She was like an agunah, and she could not get remarried. And she dressed up in disguise as a prostitute and sat at a crossroads. And Yehuda went to her and petitioned her for intimacy, thinking that she was a prostitute. So the Gemara is not interested in the whole story, but it has a problem with this. Mishum dechista paneha vayachshev elazona, because she covered her face. He thought she was a prostitute. Prostitutes don't cover their faces. In fact, prostitutes are not modest. Prostitute is the opposite of modest. So she would show you her face and the rest of herself in order to get you to come to her. So why would he think she was a prostitute because she covered her face? The truth is that he thought she was a prostitute because of where she was. She was on like a corner where prostitutes go at the crossroads. So the Gemara interprets it differently. The reason he thought that she was a prostitute because she covered her face is because she covered her face when she lived in his house. And he didn't know what she looked like. So when he saw her face uncovered as a prostitute, he didn't know that it was his daughter-in-law because she had never really spent a lot of time with him face to face, and he didn't really know what she looked like. So because of this modesty, obviously this level of modesty is not something that we are familiar with. Zachta, she merited v'yatzu mimena melachim u'nevi'im, and she had kings and prophets that came out of her. How do we know? Melachim midavid, she had kings that came out of her because she eventually, from the Davidic, from Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda, come David and the line of kings. That's obvious. U'nevi'im, but nevi'im, how did she get prophets that came from her? D'amar Rabbi Levi, mesora bi'adeno. So he adds in an additional mesora here, me'avotenu, from our forefathers. Amot v'amat. Amatzia achim hayu, that Amot and Amatzia were brothers. And Amatzia was a king from the line of David. So from Tamar and Yehuda come David, and from David comes Amatzia. But Amot is the father of Yishayahu the prophet. Uchtiv chazon Yishayahu ben Amot. So if they were also in the same family, then we can derive from here that from Tamar also came Yishayahu. And so from that sort of complicated teaching, which is discussed more fully in the first chapter of Masechet Sota, we see that this Mesorah is that the aristocracy of kings and prophets come from women who are tsnu'a. That's the teaching of Rabbi Levi. The final teaching of Rabbi Levi that we have, V'amar Rabbi Levi, davar zeh mesorah bi'adenu me'avotenu, we have an oral mesorah in our hands from our forefathers. On a totally different topic, makom aron eino min amida, the ark is not considered as a measurement. Now Rashi quotes something here which is interesting. What they're really arguing is that the Ark, the Aron HaKodesh in the first Beit HaMikdash, is kind of, if you will, out of space and time. It doesn't exist in the world in the way that most physical objects would exist. In other words, it seems to take up no space. Let's see what it says. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learn a brisa that teaches the same idea. Aron she'asa Moshe, the Aron that Moshe made, yeshlo eser amot l'chol ruach. It was 10 cubits in every direction. It was a box, and it was 10 cubits in all the directions. Uchtiv, and it's written, and this is now in the book of Malachim, this is the first Beit HaMikdash, v'lifnei ha-dvir, before the dvir was the holy, the room of the holy, that's how we're interpreting it here, and inside The Dvir was the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Esrim Ama Orach. It was 20 cubits long. And then the next verse reads, Uchtiv, and it says, Kanaf HaKruv HaEchad Eser Amot, Ukanaf HaKruv HaEchad Eser Amot. On top of the Ark, as you know, so the Ark was a box in which the Luchot were put. On top of the box was put a plate called the Kaporet, and attached to the Kaporet were two cherubs, two Kruvim, and the Kruvim had their wings outstretched. And according to this measurement, each cherub had a wings that extended 10 amot. So the two cherubs' wings were outstretched for 10 amos and 10 amos, which takes up a total of 20 amot. Now we know that inside that space there were only 20 amot total. So the question the Gemara asks is, Aron Gufei, so the Aron itself, Hecha Havakai, where would it go? Since the Kruvim and their 20 Amot wingspan were taking up the entire space of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where would the Aron fit? El Alav, but no, rather, Shmamina, learn from this, Benes Haya Omeid, that the Ark was there miraculously. Now, Benes Haya Omeid is a little different. We saw that teaching, Nes Haya Omeid, earlier, that the that in the Luchot that were inscribed all the way through the stone, that the donut hole of the Mem Sofit, Benes Haya Omeid, it hovered there. So according to this teaching, it sounds like perhaps the Ark didn't rest on the ground, but was suspended in space, sort of in between the wings of the Kruvim. But the way that it said it earlier was Eino Min Amida, that it had no physical measurement at all. In other words, even though it should have taken up 10 amot, it somehow miraculously took up no space at all, and it was both there and not there at the same time. Either way, it's a really interesting and quasi-mystical sort of teaching, and that is the third teaching of Rabbi Levi. We'll stop there, and at the beginning of our next recording, we're going to start to talk about how the Amoraim, how the rabbis of the Talmud used to introduce their drushas about Purim. We'll continue next time. Have a wonderful day.